call the meeting to order on Conference Committee on Senate File 3056. And I thought a good way to begin was getting to know each other, since we may not all have served on conference committees together. So my name is Denny Fredrickson. I'm a state senator from District 21. My home is in New Ulm. And why don't we just go around the table this side and introduce yourselves?
Greg Knapp, Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis.
Carlin Doyle, Senate Council.
Ellen Anderson, Senate District 66,
Tom Sachs, Southern Senate District 3, International Falls, Grand Rapids, up to the Lake of the Woods and down to Mille Lacs Lake.
Sandy Rummel, Senate District 53, I live in White Bear Lake.
Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Ed Warner, Senate Republican Research.
Eileen Schroer, DFL House Research.
Mark Nicely, House Republican Research.
Janelle Taylor, Health Research.
Denise Dietrich, representative for District 47A, which is all of Champlin and the part of Coon Rapids.
Carlos Mariani, District 65B in St. Paul.
Dennis Osmond, 37B, Rosemount, Apple Valley.
Karen Clark, state representative in three neighborhoods in South Minneapolis.
Wendy Havistow, legislative assistant to Senator Fredrickson.
Rick Hansen, state representative, 39A, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, Lilydale, and a little bit of Egan. Well, members, we have a side-by-side in front of us. The way I would propose we proceed is to go through this side-by-side, and where the provisions are the same, are very similar, that we adopt them right away, because my intention would be to have one conference committee meeting and wrap this up if we can. And I know there are some other provisions that have passed the House and or the Senate that could legitimately be brought before this committee. There are a few of those I think we should entertain, but it's not my intent to turn this into a huge omnibus bill, but where there are significant issues that have passed one body or the other and we can under our rules, bring them here and consider them, I'm willing to do that. But I don't want to open the floodgates. So with that, if there aren't any questions, I'm going to ask Mr. Knapp and Ms. Doyle to go through the side-by-side and tell us what's in them, and if they're the same or very similar, that we adopt them.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start. On the first page, you've got the permanent school fund reporting in two sections, in section one and section two, and as I understand it, those are identical. And there wouldn't be a problem with just adopting those as they are. First two sections.
Mr. Knapp, that'd be sections one and two.
Sections one and two.
I'll move those, Mr. Chair.
Motion to approve sections one and two. Discussion. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. The motion carries and the sections are adopted.
Section three is a facilities management account. That was the original bill. That was the park department language, and that is the same also in both in section three.
Section 4 identical.
Section 4 is identical, so if you want to go ahead and do those at the same time. Section 4 is the Environmental Learning Center. For that. Again, it's the same. Different issue.
Okay. Questions?
Mr. Chair,
let's
so move those two sections.
Representative Mariani has moved adoption of sections 3 and 4. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails and the amendments sections are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, on the House side, you have a number of sections that are House only in a row here, and they're all dealing with extending the temporary registration for snowmobile licenses. And these were in Senate File 3062. Senator Bach had the bill. It didn't get a hearing on the Senate side. I think it was just a late bill, and there wasn't time on the Senate deadlines to do that. But if you look at sections 5, 6, 7 on page R4, 8, on page R4, and also on page 9, or excuse me, section 9 on page R5. That's the ATV one, but it's basically the same idea with the 21-day temporary registration. Those were all in Senator Bach's bill 3062. It basically just extends the time period of temporary registrations. Section 10 on the House side was, Senator Scogin had that, and that deals with youth ATV operation. That also didn't get a hearing, another late bill, and the House has included Section 10 here, but that was in Senator Scogan's bill without a hearing. So just go by those for now.
Any questions from the Senate side on these?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I'm not familiar with these, but they don't look very controversial. I wonder if someone from the House could explain if there was any opposition to these provisions or who's in support of them.
Mr. Meyer, could you give us some information on these sections? Mr. Meyer, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, as Senate staff has explained, these are pretty much technical corrections, technical changes to sections 5, 6, 7, and 8 deal with licensing and how long a temporary license is in effect for. It brings everything basically to the same period of time where a temporary license for a outdoor recreation vehicle is good for 21 days. Some were only good for 10 days, so those are the main changes there. Section 7 on the House language, 5.24 to 5.25, just makes that, moves the time frame up when snowmobile licenses are due to January 30th of the year of expiration, similar to our other motorized recreation vehicle licensing. Section 8 does that same change, makes the temporary registration permit, well, Section 8 is a little bit different, dealing with the temporary registration permit, may include the snowmobile state trail sticker if the trail sticker fee is included with the registration fee. All of those pieces had been worked out with Minnesota United Snowmobile Association. They do support those provisions. Section 10 is a bill that the department introduced clarifying something that was inadvertently struck several sessions ago, which will require now that a person under the age of 16 needs to have their ATV safety training certificate in order to operate on state or grant and aid trails. This is something that we had previously. We did some changes. We lost it. We want to clarify that in order to ride on the state trails, you do need to be trained. And again, going to page 8, or R7, I should say, continuing with that section, it just clarifies that a person under age 16 may not operate an all-terrain vehicle on public lands or waters without being able to reach the pedals, the control and handlebars, and reach the foot pegs while sitting in an upright position on the seat of the all-terrain vehicle. This is something that we have for taking the test. We wanted to make sure that when these people are riding on the trails, they're riding on machines that do fit them for safety purposes. The All-Terrain Vehicle Association in Minnesota does support these changes. We work with them closely on these. And those are those sections, Mr. Chair and members.
Are there any questions on these sections?
Mr. Chair, I'd move those sections if it's appropriate.
Representative Osman has moved adoption of sections 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10
of the House position.
Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the sections are adopted. Mr. Knopf.
Chairman, members, on page R7, you have two identical provisions on the state parks and waste, basically removing monuments from the language in the state parks chapter. And Mr. Chairman, I think we were talking earlier about making a couple of minor technical changes.
Mr. Knopf, that's right. There's some archaic language in here, and I think that this would be an appropriate time to correct those, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, it would be on 14.29. On the Senate, we'll deal with the Senate side. 14.29, delete such and insert off. And then delete and by such means as and insert that. On 14.31, delete such, insert the. And on line 15.3, just delete such, or strike such. Should be striking it. Maybe it.
Questions on these sections?
Mr. Chair, I would move that the Senate language with those changes incorporated, if any.
Senator Anderson has moved adoption of Section 5 on the Senate side with the changes that Mr. Knopf has read. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and this section is adopted.
And Mr. Chair, did you say, or did Mr. Knopf say Section 7, 8, and 11 are also identical?
We just said, oh, Mr. Knopf.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senators, I hadn't said that yet, but
oh.
They are.
Oh, I didn't mind. Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move those sections as well, if I may.
And is, before I ask for that, is the Grand Portage State Park, are they identical also?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I thought Senator Anderson was including that. It's Section 7, 8, and 11 on the Senate side, and 13, 14, and 15 on the House side.
And Senator Anderson has moved adopting Sections 13, 14, and 15 on the House side of the side-by-side. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nay. The motion prevails and the sections are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, on page R8, there's a section 16 on the House side. I think you want to, that goes along with the 21-day provision that you adopted earlier. So, but do you want to just do section 16, that corresponds with the book on those sections?
Representative Osmond has moved adoption of section 16. Discussion? There being no discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and section 16 on the House side is adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, members, on section 12 on the Senate, 17 on the House, you've got the campfire provision. The one difference is that the House adds at the end a definition of what maintains means. So maintains means tending or adding substantial fuel to a campfire with the intention of extending the life of the campfire. So it defines maintains because now every person who maintains that fire is going to be responsible for it.
I think Representative Osmond has Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, I have a technical amendment to that section. It was on line 1010, which is the top of page R9. It would be deleting the word intention and inserting the word effect, EFFECT.
Okay. Discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson. If they weren't a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout, they might not, and they didn't do a very good job, they might not have that effect. Keep that in mind. You could throw a lot of wood on it, if it's wet wood, you're not going to have the effect.
But they would have the intent that they intended to build a fire.
Yeah, sorry, I think a fact is. And a Girl Scout. Yeah.
This amendment is a suggestion of the department.
See, and that's part of section. Can we just combine that? Would you move the whole section?
I'll move the section and the amendment.
Representative Osmond has moved adoption of section 17 on the House side with the change on page 10, line 10, delete intention and insert effect. Discussion on that motion? Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the section is adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, then we get to the alternative recording of state forest roads. And Mr. Chairman, the difference between the two sides is the House has the original department language. The Senate in Senator Saxhog's committee, subcommittee, if I remember right, there were a few things that were noted, that there were some circular references, there were some redundant references in the way it worked if you inputted the definition into the words, and then there was also some concern over which county recorder standards. So the Senate clearly states that it's where the roads are located, the standards of that county, and also on like 16.27, the Senate deletes state there because you're basically adopting a forest roadmap, because you can see the state forest roadmap is the one adopted by the commissioner, so it doesn't have to be adopted before it's adopted again. And so there were some circular reference problems with the original language, and so the Senate cleaned that up. So it's basically just technical revisions on the Senate side that cleaned up some of that language. But otherwise, they're identical. There's no substantive difference except the technical changes.
See, and That's section 13?
Section 13 in the Senate.
Senator Saxall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Mr. Kanaz said, the alternative recording for state forest roads was in the Senate was a part of my forestry bill. And because of that, I'd like to offer the DV0162 amendment, which is my forest bill, and which includes the forest road portion.
Have a page distribute the amendment. Representative Mariano.
Just for a question about process, is it the chair's intention to go through the entire bill and adopt state and similars at this point? And so perhaps we should revisit this issue, or is this closer up to state and similars we should act on at this point?
Representative Mariano, with this exception, my intention was to go through the entire bill, but since part of what we're dealing with now on the section we just described is also involved in this amendment. So that's why Senator Saxall is moving him now. If you'd like to wait until after we've gone through it to consider.
Not at all, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear.
Sure, absolutely. So Senator Saxall, you want to explain
yes,
the
yeah,
and,
like
and
this,
how it got this far, how it would be appropriate
absolutely.
For us to consider it?
Absolutely. We in the off-season, in the interim, we had a committee in the Senate under Senator Anderson, Senator Chaudhry's committee that studied the forests, and particularly the fragmentation of the forests up north, and one of the ways that we think that we can leave some of this fragmentation, that being consolidation. So the three parts of this are the Minnesota Forest for the Future, which is the Minnesota DNR's plan for alleviating the fragmentation. One of the major parts of it is a revolving loan fund. Now, right now it doesn't have any money in it, but as soon as that comes about, that revolving loan fund will be in place. And the revolving loan fund simply means that when an easement needs to be purchased, it can be purchased from a piece of land. You buy a piece of land, do the easement, sell. After you take the easement, you can sell a piece of land and put the money back in the revolving fund. So we've seen it that it has a lot of possibilities and has worked quite well in county government. So the second portion of it is expedited land exchanges. Again, in the whole situation with the Minnesota Steel Project, the largest land exchange in the history of the state of Minnesota, 7,000 acres, it was found that, in the Minnesota Department of the DNR found out that, you know, this we don't have to extend every abstract. If we did, it would have taken quite a few years. Title insurance is a good alternative. The private appraisers can sometimes do a good job. And in fact, when you have two pieces of land, they don't have to match up exactly. When you hit a certain threshold, you should be able to pay cash for the difference. So I mean, those are examples of the reason why the expedited land exchange has come about, and it's basically between the state and local units of government, mainly counties. The last piece, again the fourth one was the alternative recorded forest roads, is the state conservation easements wetland bank credit, and what that does is on large pieces of wetland, and this is only for that area of the state where there's over 80% of its pre-settlement wetlands. There are areas where forest land, usually in swamp area, tamarack, cedar, spruce, those areas it would be better if they weren't cut because because of their effect on wetlands. So what we're saying here is that you can put a conservation easement on those lands, and then in certain cases, and and it's a small portion of that in terms of the percentage, but mitigation can be done in other parts of the county. I have John Jasky from Bowser here if there's any questions on that particular piece. So that kind of are the three pieces, and I'd be happy to stand for questions.
One other question, Senator Sachs, I'll get. And has this passed the Senate in some form, another bill?
Yes, it did.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to have our members take a look at this and compare with the House. If we could set it aside for...
That'd be great.
And then we can move through some more of the same and similar.
So Senator Saxlog is withdrawing the DV-0162 temporarily, and we'll proceed on with the side-by-side. Mr. Pinnock.
And Mr. Chairman, I assume we'll just skip over the alternative recording because that's all subject, that's all in the agenda. So then, Mr. Chairman, we can move on to page R11. And that's the post-issue natural, that's correspondence, that's again part of the original bill, but that's what the administrator cites account in the natural resource fund. And so and those are identical, section 5 in the Senate and 19 on the House. And actually, if you want to, I guess, save on motions here, but all of page R, actually through 3.4 in the Senate and 12.5 on the House, all the way through the end of that page, all the way through 20.8 and 14.5 on the House side, 20.8 in the Senate. So basically those two sections, section 5 and 14 in the Senate or 19 and 20 in the House, are identical.
Section 5, Mr. Kanaugh, section 5 and section 14
of the Senate. 14 in the Senate or 19 and 20 on the House are identical. The second part is just technical, and the first part deals with that administrative sites funding as part of the original bill.
Representative Clark. Okay. Representative Clark has moved the adoption of sections 19 and 20 on the House side of the side by side. A discussion on that motion? Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the sections are adopted. Mr. Knapp.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, now you've got the provision on the House side, and I'll also mention there's a repealer that goes along with it. There are restrictions on the DNR when they acquire basically acquisition of public waters of the state. When they acquire those areas to provide the boating ramps and whatever. And right now they can't exceed 7 acres. You can see the language on 14.10 to 14.11, and access may not exceed 7 acres and may only be acquired where access is inadequate. So there are some restrictions currently on the access. So the Senate didn't hear, the Senator Scogin introduced the 3401. It was a very late bill on the Senate side, and there wasn't time to hear it. There's also a repealer. If you look back on page R19, you'll also see on the House side, 20.12, you see the repeal of 97A-141 subdivision 2. Those are additional limitations on public access acquisition. And what that does is limit them to where they can take it through condemnation. It limits certain, it has to be riparian water. In other words, the section lines have to go around the water body. If the section lines go underneath the water body, where the land is actually privately owned, it restricts them from providing access in those areas. And so what this does is it broadens what they can do for acquiring public access in the state. And it does, it's something the Senate didn't hear. Okay.
Mr. Meyer, would you?
Mr. Chair, members, again, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, thank you. This was a bill that we did move through the process. Senator Scogin did introduce it in the Senate side. The issue we're trying to deal with is our water access sites need to be larger to deal with stormwater management retention. We need to put in ponds in some cases, and also the shoreland itself. We need to do larger shoreland restoration activities related to some of these facilities, not only for the protection of the resource, but also as demonstration projects to other landowners so they can see what can be done in their lands in a native or natural vegetative method, rather than cutting down grass right to the shoreline and putting in riprap. We want to be able to use these sites to make sure they're environmentally friendly and meeting stormwater runoff standards, but also as demonstration sites so people can see alternative ways to protect their shoreline. That was the intention of the bill.
Questions for Mr. Meyer? Senator Shadrick.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, why do you need more acreage to do more shoreline protection?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, being limited to a site of 7 acres or less than 7 acres, and focusing mainly on providing parking for those sites, what we're facing with right now is that either we can't find sites that are that small, or we can't find a site that allows us to put in the proper number of parking spaces with boat trailers and non-motorized access. If you've been to a boat ramp, there are trailer-only spots, and then we have parking spaces for canoes, kayaks, things of that nature. They're often always full and in competition with each other, but in order to meet the stormwater management strategies that we need to have to meet with the PCA stormwater management rules, we need to have larger sites. And those, our retention ponds and our retention strategies, mitigation strategies, are included on those site sizes. So in order to provide parking and deal with the runoff and everything else, we feel we need to remove this prohibition that's in statute.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Shadrick.
Mr. Myers, has the department considered permeable parking spaces?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair. Members, we are looking at all sorts of alternatives that are out there. Permeable pavers that are out there, they work in certain circumstances, but to put them in a high traffic parking lot, some of our smaller non-populated accesses are okay. If you look at the manufacturer's claim to some of those materials, they're for low impact basketball court type situations, things of that nature, to stand up with a 20-foot boat and a half-ton pickup truck turning around, backing up, and things like that. We try to do whatever possible, but we also need to make sure we're doing improvements that get the most dollar for the state.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, which access sites have permeable access points at the moment?
Mr. Chair, members, I could bring up Ron Potter. I don't know if he has any exact information on that. We can certainly provide it to the committee at some point in time.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Meyer, Shadrick. I was asking the information now.
Mind, do you have any?
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Ron Potter with PNR Trails and Waterways. Mr. Chairman, Senator Shadrick, I don't believe we have any on the ground right now. We've been looking at it. From our research, the jury's still out on if that really does work. We've been working with the Division of Waters to try to assess some of that stuff, but again, like Bob had indicated, it doesn't seem to work well in the situation that we'd be trying to use it for.
The last question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Shadrick.
Isn't this proposal just to allow the DNR to increase parking lot sizes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shadrick, it's really, it's much more than that. It's we need to deal with the stormwater within our sites. We need to be able to try to comply with the same rules that the other lakeshore owners comply with. Again, understand that we operate on a willing seller, so this is just in situations where that land might be available and the owner is willing to sell us something larger that can accommodate not only that stormwater and those type of issues, but further expansion, needs in the future.
Mr. Potter, we did not hear an explanation of the repealer that's in the repealer section of the bill. And what does that section do?
Mr. Chairman, the repealer deals with we couldn't acquire on lakes that were less than 150 acres in size, that was the meandered size, and they had to be intensively managed for fisheries. What we're seeing is that there's increasing demand for recreational activities on lakes to be able to get on just for kayaking, bird watching, that type of activity. And with subsection 2, we weren't allowed to pursue those type of public accesses.
Mr. Potter, so with this in place, you weren't even able to put in like a canoe access or?
We could not acquire, Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Potter or Mr. Meyer?
Chairman, I just wanted to explain, too, that there were some other restrictions within that. There's 150 acres, but there's also, it prohibits them from using the, they do have, and you'll see in the language, they have the authority to acquire these by condemnation, with the approval of the executive council. And there was a prohibition, and there's a prohibition in subdivision two, basically that if it's completely surrounded by land owned by or maintained by an educational religious institution, they can't acquire it on excess site adjacent that contain less than 200 acres within the meander lines may not be acquired by condemnation. It also prohibits them from acquiring access to public waters that are not meandered. And so then the question is that that's where, you know, the section lines go to the center and there's not private, there's private ownership basically underlying the water body when you're unmeandered. And so that, so there are some other prohibitions that are in there. So the question is, do you want to broadly open that all up or not?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I just asked Ms. Doyle to get us copies of the language so we can read that repealed section.
Shall we set this aside then to have a chance to look at that? So section 21 and that part of the repeal will be set aside for later. Mr. Knopf,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Starting on page R13, we have two sections that deal with mixed municipal solid waste. And basically, they're changing the definition of mixed municipal solid waste in subdivision, or section 6 and sections 22, to change the definition. And then also in section 7 and section 23, they're changing the definition of source-separated compostable materials. This basically, what I understand is that these changes would allow people to recycle curbside compostable materials, which is not allowed currently. And the only difference I noted was the effective date was, there was no effective date included on the Senate side, and I noted that that was the same in 3385, the way that it was passed out of the Senate, and I don't know on the House, some they must have added an effective date. So that was the only difference I noted.
And members, this section was not in the Senate bill as it passed the Senate, but it was in Senate File 3385, which did pass the Senate. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was my amendment to the Senate File 3585, and I really support this language. I think it's a good idea to have an immediate effective date, and so that I would support the House position on this. That makes sense.
Are you moving it?
Sure, I would. Sure, Mr. Chair, I'll move Section 22 and 23, the House language.
Senator Anderson has moved Section 22 and 23 on the House side of the side-by-side. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and Section 22 and 23 are adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next section, Section 8 on page R14, Sections 8 and Sections 24, construction debris as cover material. This was Senator Metzen's bill. It was in 3385, but it was also included in House File 3722, the economic development article that has been signed by the governor. So it is Chapter 300, so it is.
Well, you're telling us this
yes.
is a done deal.
This
we
is
can
a
just
done
leave.
Deal. Yes.
We'll just leave this on the table then.
Correct.
Proceed on.
Okay, sections 9 and 25. This is the permitting for by the PCA for new facilities for air quality permits. And this was a Senator Berglund provision in the Senate. There are some differences down on line 8.6 and starting on line 16.4 on the House side. There were a few additions in front of on line 8.6. This on the Senate side, it was inserted new permit to a new facility. This was inserted in order to so that this would only apply to new facilities, not a reissued permit. So that was a difference there. Also on the House side, some additional language was added for the Pollution Control Agency to do some analyzing of levels of
environmental pollution on this certain areas. That was not included on the Senate side, and so that is a significant difference. The rest of the provisions that the PCA would consider when issuing a new permit are the same on both the House and Senate sides.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, this is my legislation in the House, and the difference really is that the House language says that these conditions have to be analyzed and considered, and the cumulative health impact needs to be considered in agencies looking at doing a permit. The Senate language is basically a flat-out prohibition, mm-hmm. and I would prefer that we have the House language in this.
Representative Clark, I thought the little bit of language in the Senate side that said the agency may not issue a new permit to a new facility would be appropriate to put in and make sure we're not catching an existing facility that's going to be re-permitted that we don't want to catch with this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
Thank you. The again, that's a clear prohibition of the permit to an facility. If you look over the language on 16.4, the agency may not issue a permit to a facility. I would be willing to put new in front of the facility there if that makes you more comfortable, but the difference is one is requiring an analysis and the other is just an outright. So
I'll ask Senate Counsel.
I was going to say, I do understand that in this area, for example, Abbott Northwestern Hospital has a permit, and so they would also be subject to these analysis, and they may not be able to get to renew their permit. And I guess that was why maybe we added the new facility, new permit. For example, they are in the same district as this Midtown Burner. That was the kind of the concern, and I don't know if that.
Representative Clark.
Again, it's still broad, okay. I think we could take care of that by inserting, if that's a concern, on line 16.4, the word new in front of facility, and then that keeps it more limited. This is the discussion we had on the House floor, to retain that language, and I would like to do that rather than do the all-out.
President Clark, I think I would like to have new in front of permit, too, so in case they would change over to some, at Abbott Northwestern, change over to some new equipment that would require a new permit.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would also add that originally there was a fiscal note for this analysis, and my understanding is that now there is no fiscal note to do this analysis. Originally it was like a $2 million fiscal note or something. Well, because it was statewide. And so that has been removed, so there is not that concern anymore. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
There is a small fiscal note, but it's the agency who could absorb it, and I do have a fiscal note with me to make sure that they will absorb it. I'm a little concerned about adding new in front of permit, but I do understand your concern, Senator, so I'm just think about that a bit, because I think it's okay.
I think what Representative Clark is thinking about is that she talked with some people and we've made some understanding here. And this is just processing through how this would be.
Mm-hmm. So, Representative Clark, are you comfortable having new in front of permit and facility?
Mr. Chairman, I'm comfortable having in front of facility.
Okay.
I'm not sure about new in front of permit.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, while Representative Clark thinks about this, and I don't know if this issue will arise, but it does seem to me that if the issue is, and I've got five hospitals in my district, so I learned a long time ago they do burn things and have been for forever, and understand the need for that. But if the issue here is an existing hospital, it seems to me that that facility will never be a new facility. It will always be an old and present facility. And so I think logically there it falls to me that if if the concern is not to do damage to that facility, I think there's probably consensus here on that, but that simply having the word near the facility should be able to cover that.
Well, Representative Clark, what?
Chair, I think they're both okay.
So, will you move?
Keep the commitment that I'm making, and I think it also makes it clear a concern, but I agree. If by the end of this conference committee I come up with a thought, I'll be sure to come back.
Sure. will you move the section then with those addition of new
and
those two locations?
And the addition of the words new kind of permit and facility.
Discussion on Representative Clark's motion to adopt section 25. There being no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the section is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on to page R15, section 6 and section 26. This is the language from Senator Lynch's bill, the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. This is the membership provision, and there are some differences, and I'm not exactly sure how this evolved, but it's mostly just differences in committee designee, some language taken out, and I'm not sure which one exactly how this evolved.
Representative Dietrich, I am told that you are the in-house expert on this.
Well, author.
Author, okay. Close enough.
Yes, and I did want to say that I worked very closely with Senator Lynch on this. We both went up north and did the DNR tour, and so we both experienced the same tour and knowledge, and we worked on this language together, and we have merged language, and so what happened is we got a little convoluted in some areas, so I'll try to just clarify some of that. The section 26, they are very similar, and as mentioned, they deal with the school fund advisory committee. There is one notable difference, and I will use the House language because I think that it is a better way to approach it. Line 17.17, we add a natural resource conservation person onto the permanent school fund advisory committee. We did that because we thought it was important just to have the voice of conservation. If we are trying to maximize revenue to the schools, that the voice of conservation also needed to be balanced along with people with finance and land development and other things. So that is a major difference. And then on line 17.24 and 25, we have reference to statute where a conflict of interest and code of ethics is addressed, and I think that that's also important to include in this section. And then when you go on to duties on the House language, I did also want to make one other point. I'll get back to that when I, we have the word may, when you talk about the committee report that would be submitted to the legislature once a year, we have the word may instead of what the report may include instead of what it must include. And then when we talk about
what line is that? I didn't see.
Oh, I'm sorry. 17.33. And then when we have the outline of what the report may include, once again, there are just some technical type differences. But in the House language, it aligns perfectly with Section 1, which is exactly the same. And I think that that is important if we are trying to provide more oversight, accountability, and to the management of the DNR, and we are asking that for them to report on certain things, that it ought to be very consistent from what we expect of the commissioner. And what we expect from the committee would be the same language. So I would also recommend adopting the House language there.
Mr. Chairman.
Did I just totally confuse you, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Knopf.
I just wanted, there's just a couple of other things I just wanted to note on the differences. One is on the appointment by the Commissioner of Education on the Senate side. It also asked for advice after consultation with the chairs of legislative committees of jurisdiction over K-12 policy and budget. I don't see that on the House side. And then also, the House has on 17.20, the graduate committee must include a non-voting member appointed by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. The Senate language is a little more elaborate. And on 4.4, it says the advisor must include a non-voting professional staff person appointed by the commissioner, and this non-voting member shall provide the committee with professional advice and technical support on those issues. So it's a little more extensive than what it's describing that person to be. And there's also on 4.15 to draft legislation to come forward. So there are some other kind of things that the Senate added to the bill that aren't on the House side.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had, this bill sort of took a strange path in the Senate, and I never got a chance to hear it in my division, even though I had requested it a number of times. It was kind of stuck in the Education Finance Committee, and it never made it to mine, and then it was a floor amendment, and so I was a little frustrated I didn't get a chance to, we didn't really get a chance to flesh out the language in committee like we should have. And I did work with Senator Lynch a little bit on this on the Senate floor to, the main concern I had was, and I think the House does a good job of really putting in that balance between maximizing short-term revenues, but also maintaining the long-term value of the land. And so I do like the House language on 18.2 and 3 and 18.5 and 6, which does, you know, it just makes it clear that there's a balance that needs to be looked at, you know, and somehow that dropped out of the Senate amendment. And but we did include the additional person with an expertise in environment and natural resources conservation. That was added, and that's in the Senate side on 3.29, and that's similar to the House. So I do like the House language in that section in subdivision 2, but I'm not sure about the other. There are some other sort of more technical differences that the Senate had we might want to try to merge some of these pieces together.
And I have a question of Mr. Knopf or Ms. Doyle. On line 319 on the Senate side, we deleted "are there designees," and that was left in place. Do we need to say "are there designees," or is that provided in other sections of law when somebody's appointed to a task force?
Well, Mr. Chairman, generally, designees are usually provided in a lot of places. Sometimes you spell it out, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you actually require that the person actually sit in there. You don't allow any designee. I think it's generally allowed if you don't specify otherwise. And that it is only on the commissioner's designee that's included on the Senate side, so I'm not sure that that's necessary to have the commissioner's designee.
Representative Dietrich.
I felt pretty strongly that language should stay in because there are certain people now that have more expertise in the area of school trust lands, and it isn't necessarily the people who are automatically assigned by statute. And so I think that it is really important that those people have the ability to designate somebody to participate on this committee to have some continuity.
And Mr. Chair, as a chair, I would agree with that, but the chairs don't want to be on every committee and shouldn't be on every one, and there's a lot of expertise in the legislature. So I agree with Representative Dietrich, that makes sense to include designees.
And I don't have any difficulty with that. The question I had really is if we needed to spell it out, if that was just implicit in our minds.
I think, Mr. Chairman, actually the House doesn't include it. It's only written for the Commissioner of Education.
I thought it was the chairs of the committees on 3.19 on the Senate side. It's stricken.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So it's only, we only have the commissioner's designee.
Representative Hansen.
And is there a difference between the House and the Senate where the education committee's chairs are stricken in the Senate and are included in the House? Am I reading that correct?
Mr.
Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I think that what happens is we include policy and budget, and you have just budget, so it basically gets you to the same place. But you're right on the designee, the following person, so the Senate is actually limiting the designation except for the Commissioner of Education. And generally, commissioners can designate whomever they want to do anything. We give all of our duties to the commissioners, and they can designate people to do that. So I don't think it's necessarily true there, but with regard to the chairs, that might be a good thing to have, because I don't think you have the general authority of a commissioner to designate. So just leave that up to you.
Representative Dietrich.
Mr. Chairman, one other difference that I just realized, and I didn't realize that it happened actually, is the chairs of legislative committees with jurisdiction over the K-12 education budgets. And I've got to get used to talking about this in terms of the Senate language and the House language. I'm so used to just referring to the House language. I'm sorry. The Senate has the language that says the, what was it? I'm sorry, Brad.
It's both policy.
Both policy and budget. There we go. And we left off the policy, but I thought it was current statute that the yep. policy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Mr. Knapp. Chair, Representative Dietrich, that's right, because what you did is you left the language, if you look on 17.4, 17.5, the chairs of the education committees, and those are kind of considered the policy committees. And then so you just added the budget in addition, whereas the Senate struck that and then basically spell out policy and budget. But I think they get to the same place.
Good, because we have no intention of leaving them out. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
First, maybe we should have the environment, finance, budget, and policy chairs as well. Okay. And as well as the education, finance, and policy chairs. Does that make sense to include all four of them?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, you do. If you look
we
on
do.
Oh, we do. Sorry.
The chairs on the next line.
On the House side?
Both sides.
Yes,
chairs of the legislative committee with jurisdiction over environment and natural resources.
But not the budget. Oh, does that include the budget and policy?
Well, it doesn't. It's not clear,
it's
Mr. Chairman.
In the House language, we treated the education community the same way.
I see what you're saying. Okay, that sort of is it today. Okay, that works for me.
Do we have our members comfortable then with subdivision one of this section? Senator Saxon.
So let me get this straight. Are we saying that there's going to be designees, or you can't have designees, or is it implicit, or what?
Well, Mr. Knapp?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxon, if you adopt the House language, it's very clear that everybody can have a designee. And on the Senate language, it would spell out for the Commissioner of Education, and I guess it would imply that you couldn't if you were somebody else. So sometimes, you know, these things are spelled out, sometimes they're not. And I think designees sometimes are also appointed or designated by somebody who's supposed to be on a panel, and that can happen even if it's not spelled out. But I think if you spell it out for one, you're definitely implying that you can't for the other one. So I think you'd want the House language if you want to make sure that each of these appointees can designate somebody to replace them to sit in.
Senator Shadi.
Mr. Chair, question for staff. What is Section 84.027, Subdivision 18? This is a reference on R16 4.6.
Well, Mr. Chairman, those are powers of the Commissioner of Natural Resources. That specific subdivision is probably appointment powers of the commissioner. But let me
Mr. Chairman, it's my impression that does not exist.
And Senator Shadi, would you restate your question? I didn't track where you were looking at.
Yeah, you were.
On R16, line 4.6, what is 84.027, subdivision 18?
Couldn't. That's
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that might have been a reference for another section that was in the bill at one time. I think it was going to be a new section, and that was just a technical error that should not be included.
Oh, is that section two?
That goes back to earlier in the bill. I think there's another section in here.
It does.
And I think it's a superfluous, I think it's a superfluous reference.
Mr. Chair, that's on page R1, would be new coding for section 84.027, subdivision 18. Section 2 on both the House and Senate sides.
And it referenced that sentence, reference an appointment by the Commissioner of Natural Resources under that section, and the Commissioner doesn't appoint anybody that I can see under that section.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think you're right.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, if we adopted section 26, would that help clarify? I think.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
The only really difference, and it's a difference that I'm not sure, it's a distinction, but I'm not sure it makes a difference. On the House side, we say one person with natural resource conservation, and in the Senate, we say environment and natural resource conservation. I know Senator Anderson worked a little on that. Was there?
I don't, Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure.
I don't think it makes any difference. I don't think there's a distinction, but not a difference.
I think it's okay.
So, Representative Dietrich?
Move adoption of section 26.
Moves adoption is, I'm going to say a section 26 subdivision 1, because we haven't talked about 2 or.
Okay. So moved.
Senator Shadrick.
Mr. Chair, this question for Senator Representative Dietrich. Does the Commissioner of Natural Resources currently not now have the authority and responsibility to administer school trust fund lands?
Representative Dietrich.
I would say that it is implied that he does. When we, from the school district type community point of view, when we started looking at the roles and responsibilities of the DNR in that are constitutionally mandated through in regards to school trust lands, it became clear to the school community that we were unsure as to who is truly responsible for the school trust lands and the management of those lands in order to maximize revenue to go to the schools. And so the bill actually started out with asking the commissioner to appoint one person in the DNR that would be solely responsible, the go-to person for all school trust land type questions. And I haven't pointed this out yet, but I will now, that this bill in the House had 8 hearings. And Representative Dill actually helped us with that language. He thought that having somebody appointed in the DNR to be the go-to person for school trust lands would be another layer of management, and that we should just put it in statute that the commissioner is the person responsible and accountable to the education community in regards to school trust lands.
Mr. Chair, follow-up, Representative Dietrich. In your investigations, what did you learn about what the purpose of school trust lands are, have historically have been? We know what they do. They're the revenue from rights and all that goes to rights and rents, go to
the permanent school trust fund.
Mm-hmm. But what is that, have those been set aside as an, that function been set aside as a matter of course? Or was that the actual purpose behind it, the school trust fund land? So the question then is, if we are putting in statute the purpose is to maximize revenues from school trust fund lands, is that a change in the purpose of school trust fund lands? I think we all agree that the purpose is to allow revenue from those rents to go to school trust fund land. school trust fund, but is the purpose of that parcel to maximize the revenue, or does it have different purposes?
I'm going to call on Representative Dietrich to respond, and then Senate Counsel maybe could help us with the answer to this, too. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Constitution, it references the school trust lands, and then the school trust land fund in order to maximize revenue to school districts. And that is in the Constitution. And so you can't maximize the fund unless you're maximizing the use of the land to generate money for the school districts. So I don't think this is a new concept. I think it is just a contemporary interpretation in helping those of us who serve currently in the legislature and those who serve in the future as to how we are trustees of that land and how we are to make sure that that trust is being upheld.
Mr. Knott?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shetter, just a couple of clarifying things. There is statutory authority for the commissioner right now to manage school trust lands. In Chapter 92, is basically state lands, but it includes school trust lands. In fact, there's a definition of school trust lands. And the commissioner is directed on how those sales are to be conducted. And there are a number of other provisions that are related to how the commissioner deals with school trust lands. And also in Chapter 94, in exchanges, there are some issues in how the commissioner exchanges. So that the authority has been given to the commissioner to administer them. This will add additional language on that. And as far as your question about how they're to be managed, there is existing law on that. It's actually cross-referenced within this. It's 127.8.31. The legislature intends that as the goal of the permanent school fund to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the school trust lands consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities imposed by the trust relationship established by the Minnesota Constitution with sound natural resource conservation and management principles and other specific policy provided in state law. So there is a goal for the fund, and it is cross-referenced within the language here. Okay.
Representative Dietrich has moved adoption of Section 26 on the House Side-by-Side Subdivision 1. Discussion? Senator Anderson.
Sorry. It's being suggested perhaps that I should clarify the Environment and Natural Resources committees include policy and budget. It's just not totally clear. So if that's okay, I'd like to just add that. On line 17.7, so where it would say with jurisdiction over the Environment and Natural Resources, add policy and budget?
Representative Dietrich, could you incorporate that into
this? I would incorporate. That was the intent of the language in the first place.
Further discussion? Here. Senator Shadrick.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment I'll vote for the motion, but I just want to make a comment that I do see a distinction between what the Constitution says in terms of maximizing the permanent school trust fund and maximizing the revenues from trust fund lands. I don't know how big of a distinction that is, I'm unsure, and so I'm not going to make a stink out of it now, but I just want to make the comment that I'm concerned, and that's why my questions are, the nature of my questions is I'm concerned that there is a possibility that the maximization of revenues will be the dominant function or purpose, or it will be claimed that revenues will be the dominant purpose of these school trust funds over and above sound conservation practices, and that this statute will be seen as such. And so I just want to mark that caution that that is not the case Mr. Knopf has read and from other statutory references, and the Constitution, that we'll be watching that very closely to make sure that the purpose of this new language is to clarify the functions of the school trust fund, clarify the purposes, but that there is no one purpose that is sought to be, to dominate over the other, whether it be revenue or conservation practices. And it's my reasoning in voting for this provision that there will be a balance between the two. And that this provision will provide greater oversight, this new provision will provide greater oversight over that balance.
There being no further discussion, the question occurs on Representative Dietrich's motion to adopt the subdivision 1 of Section 26 as amended. All in support of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails, and that division, section is adopted, subdivision 1. Go to subdivision 2. And I don't think there are many differences in this one.
Mr. Chair, and then all Mr. Chairman, the difference on subdivision 2 and the duties, you've got that in the Senate 4.15, they're supposed to also provide any necessary draft legislation to the legislature as part of the recommendation. And then also, I think the Representative Dietrich mentioned earlier, the House on 17.33 says that the report may include the recommendations, and on 4.18, the Senate says must include recommendations. And then, of course, you can see the differences. The House has managed school trust lands efficiently. The Senate has improved the efficiency of the DNR management. And there are some differences. The House also includes language which is comparable to what I had read from the goal to maximize the revenue deposited and retain the value for the long-term appreciation of the trust lands, and then also maintaining sound natural resource conservation. So they picked up some language from the existing goal also on the House side. So there are some differences that way.
Senator Saxwell.
Mr. Chair, this might be a good time to just mention the fact that the Forest for the Future and the other forestry programs that we're talking about here isn't just coincidental that this type of thing is being done. It will undoubtedly improve the forests and the income that we get off them for education. So I'm glad they're coming about at the same time. It's gonna be fine.
Well, and Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
It might be helpful also to mention that in our education bill, which we just passed last night, which I don't know if it's true that there's been a veto. I heard a rumor to that fact, unfortunately. But that repeals the offset on school trust fund payments to school districts, so that the potential is there to have great. Grace Schwab is over there smiling. She's so happy that we could actually do this, except it may not have happened, but that it will allow, as we're expecting revenues on those from those lands to grow a lot into the future, that we really have the potential to have some a long-term funding source that our schools really, really need. So I think this is, it fits in really well with our education policy that we're talking about.
It's a policy term. It was the policy term.
No, that was in the finance bill.
No, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
Yeah, well, they're both vetoed and.
Representative Dietrich.
Once again, I think that there is a reason to favor the House language. I think that May report is a better way to approach that, because I don't think you want to statutorily dictate what a report must include in case it is not appropriate to maximize the revenue or to conserve the land according to conservation principles. So I think that May is a better way to approach the report, and that's on 17.33. And then the goals of that report, or the recommendations, the House language is consistent with previous statutes, and it is consistent with Section 1 of the bill. And so I think that that is also better language.
So are you moving the adoption of Subdivision 2 of Section 26 in the House?
Yes, I would like to move that.
Discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chairman, do you want to do subdivision three at the same time since that's identical.
And subdivision three, they're identical.
Yes.
Representative Dietrich has moved adoption of subdivisions two and three of section 26 of the house side of the side-by-side. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes and the sections are adopted. Section 27.
Mr. Chair, this is on page R17. This section 27 is a house-only provision, and this provision would add Pine Grove Zoo to the list of entities funded through the state lottery payments in lieu of sales taxes. And it would also allow zoos that are not accredited already by the American Zoo Association to expend funds under the statute to help in getting accreditation.
Well, members, there is no section like this in the Senate side. So I'm going to, Senator Anderson, do you want to comment on this?
Well, yes.
I was going to suggest we set it aside till later.
That's fine.
But Mr. Chairman, do you want to move on to section 28 on the house side?
Yes.
The easement on tax forfeited land, this would allow them to grant a 40-year easement to the regional rail authority, and that the easement would only be canceled by resolution of the county board after reasonable notice. The current law in 282.04 does allow for cancellation for other reasons too, and this is a guarantee, and apparently the states in the bonding bill, there was quite a bit of money for this, and this would ensure that the 40-year period when we usually require things that easements to run, that they wouldn't be able to cancel the easement during that time period. And Mr. Chairman, the rules section, these are rulemaking provisions that the DNR is asking for to go along with the changes that are made on the 21-day provision for the snowmobile and ATV registration. Now, I'll just mention this, Mr. Chairman, just allow me a moment here. The department doesn't need these provisions. There are, Chapter 14 allows for this when a statute is changed, that the department needs to adjust their rules to meet, and there's no interpretation of law required, that they can already go ahead and do this under the good cause exemption that's there. But what they're asking for is to give them specifically, so I guess it's the suspenders along with the belt, to make sure that they can do this, but they do have existing authority under this, as long as there's no interpretation required to do it. And as I understand it, these provisions don't require any interpretation, but they are asking for it. So.
Well, let's go back to section 28 and the easement. The questions about that, it's a house provision, but I think we've had some discussion on the Senate side about that. Yes. Senator Saxall, perhaps you know more about
this. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's what it involves is a piece of tax forfeit property that was kind of overlooked when the easements were set up for the new short line railroad that's going to go into the Minnesota Steel Plant. The bonding money is mostly for the Minnesota Steel Short Line Rail, for Itasca County. So this was kind of an oversight, and that's what this is all about. I move it.
Senator Saxog has moved adoption of Section 28 on the House side. The discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion to adopt Section 28 indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those nay. The motion prevails and Section 28 is adopted. Section 29, the suspenders and belt. Do we want to give the department suspenders and belt, or should we let them just get along with the belt? Senator Shadrick.
Is this the provision that Mr. Knopf was just referring to?
Yes.
So, why do we need to give permission to the department for something they can already do?
That's a good question. Why don't we ask Mr. Meyer who wants to comment?
Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This provision was in a bill that was, I believe, drafted by Senator Dill and Senator Baca. It was not a department bill. We did ask for these provisions to be put in there so it was explicitly clear with the rulemaking exemptions that are there right now. The past several years, we've been working on cleaning up existing statute to make sure where there is a decision that needs to be made or some decision that is placed upon the department that it is explicitly exempt from rulemaking in 14386 paragraph B, that it does not apply. Rules are subject. Initial rules required by this section are exempt from rulemaking, and rules are subject to 14.386, except notwithstanding sub B. The rules continue in effect until repealed or superseded by other law or rule. It's something we're trying to put into our statutes. It's completely up to you folks if you want to do that or not. So,
Mr. Knapp.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the issue is, and this, the issue is what else are you going to do besides update them to reflect the statutes? Because if you're going to do that, there's a good cause exemption in the rules right now that allows you to do that as long as you're just updating. As I understand it, these are just the 21-day provision for the registration for snowmobiles and ATVs, and I'm not sure what else you're going to do beyond that. It says to implement the changes in law made in those sections, and the question is there some interpretation that needs to go on, or is it just a matter of updating them to reflect the statutory changes?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not really sure, not having those rule sections right in front of me, what needs to be done. We can certainly comply with the expedited rulemaking process, and if something's needed, come back next year and try to clean it up that way if we need to.
Well, Mr. Knapp. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, even if you can't make rule changes, the law is the law, and it would be whatever the law says, not what's in the rules. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I don't see any motion to put it in the conference committee report. So. Representative Clark, you wanted to ask us to revisit the...
I did, Mr. Chairman.
Tell us what section it is.
Yes, it's section 25 and policy section 9 in the Senate. And I did talk to the public with the police control agency representative from here. And their advice is we should stick with the House language because it's even new in front of either of those words creates an exception that we did not intend. Because what, for example, on the site that we're concerned about is the physical education. There is a facility, so a changed permit could potentially be seen as a loophole. In other words, it's still be granted. So we don't want to leave that out. I don't know if we want to ask Ms. Holbeck to go back with it.
I'd be interested in asking her a question quickly. Ms. Holbeck, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And you understand the question of why we're the section we're on. And the question is if we need to put a new facility. And the Senate concern was this is close to Abbott Northwestern Hospital, which I believe has a permit. So if we would this catch, the way the House language is written, would that catch Abbott Northwestern Hospital or potentially?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Myrna Holbeck, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Pollution Control Agency. And it will potentially capture Abbott Northwestern, but on the other hand, the facility that I understand that the concern is on there, if you put new facility into the thing, they will not necessarily be a new facility, but a modification of that existing facility. The first process that you go through, the first facility that would do this evaluation would do the majority of the work, and they will tell you for all the other facilities coming down the work, because this is required you to look at all of those facilities. Abbott Northwestern would be evaluated anyway through this process with the facility under question. So they will already have had their evaluation done. And the issues and modification for that hospital, should they need to revise their permit in any manner, would have already be analyzed. They will already know what's happening up front.
So our concern is not well placed.
Well, I understand your concern, and in trying to balance that concern with Representative Clark and the communities there to make sure that the existing facility that is of question, that is looking and seeking a permit from us now do this evaluation, potentially the words new, either in front of new permit or new facility, will could present the argument that they are not the facility there. For Abbott Northwestern, they would be able to use the analysis already done to say, how do we fit in with this situation and doing it. It's the newest one permitted that will have to address any issues in the potential impact. So this newest one impacting will have to manage it.
Senator Schauder.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair. Don't the criteria 1 through 5 make it clear what facility we're talking about in the issuance of this, in regard to this provision?
It will limit it. It will certainly show which, yes, we know which facility this one is pointed at. I think what the chair and others are concerned about, as you expand from this, it doesn't limit from going out. It kind of describes as close as possible to that facility, but Abbott Northwestern is not too far away from that. But they're included in the analysis. I believe they will know the analysis up front.
Okay, thank you. Representative Clark moves to reconsider the vote whereby Section 25 of the House side of the side-by-side was adopted. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion is back before us. Representative Clark, if you would withdraw your previous motion and then re-offer it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That advice, I will withdraw the previous motion and then
adopting Section 25.
As Mr. Chairman, I'd like to adopt Section 25 on the House.
Representative Clark has moved to adopt Section 25 on the House side of the side-by-side discussion. There being no discussion, all those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails, and Section 25 is adopted.
Mr. Chair, there's just one more thing. Chairman, on page R19, we have the repealers, and this is what I've mentioned earlier. I think you do have a copy now of the repealed language. You see the House has the same repealers the Senate does, so we can look on the House side. There are two additional repealers. On 20.12, you've got that Interstate State Park reciprocity provision that's being repealed. I think that was a four member of Representative Osmond. And then 97A-141 subdivision 2, that's a limitation on public access acquisition. And again, you should have the language now in your hand about what's being repealed. You can see it's more than just the 150 acres. There are some additional restrictions in there that would be repealed with repealing the entire subdivision. So those are the two items. The one is the reciprocity Interstate State Park, but again, that's Representative Osmond wants to talk about. That's the, apparently Wisconsin hasn't done that, so we're just getting rid of our law that allows us to do it if they do it.
That's correct.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the other one, you have the language on the limitations on the acquisition. I'll just hand it out to you. So.
Okay, so we could adopt similar.
Mm-hmm. Yes, repealers. Mr. Chairman, the rest of them are the same. Besides those two. So if you adopted the Senate repealer, you would have all the ones that are the same, and then you have the two additional ones on the House side.
Okay. Senator Schauder.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was wondering maybe if the department could come up and answer what the repealer on subdivision 2, how that relates to the stormwater management and shoreline management that they were referring to with these access sites.
Mr. Potter, did you hear the question?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I did. Senator Chaudhry. Repealer on number 2 really doesn't tie into the stormwater issue and the acreage change. It's just the repealer of 2, basically it's doing away with that 150 acre limit, allowing allowing the department to acquire accesses on lakes smaller than 150 and that are not just intensively managed for fisheries, and also deals with that other lakes that are owned and maintained for the purpose of education or religious institutions.
Mr. Potter, I'm curious why you want to repeal subdivision 2. You know, what does this prevent you from doing that you'd like to do?
Mr. Chairman, what subdivision 2 does is there are a lot of smaller lakes out there under 150 acres that, again, that are not managed just for fisheries. They have some recreation or hunting opportunities or just bird watching that the public may not be able to get access to right now. And with this, we cannot acquire access on those lakes, even if there are willing sellers. And this would allow us to, on those situations where the public wants to get on those lakes, we could go in and acquire a site if there were some willing sellers.
Senator Schottner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greater than 7 acres or at all?
At all. Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, the two are separate, really. Sub 2 would allow us to then acquire some of those sites on smaller lakes. The 7-acre issue is more in the other part of the statute.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Potter, what is the specific example that has brought about the need for this repealer?
Mr. Potter.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, to name a specific lake, the only one that comes to mind is that there was a Robinson Lake, St. Louis County, that was 140 some acres, under the 150. It had some good waterfowl hunting potential, but we could not acquire an access on it. The public had asked us to try to acquire something. We did find a willing seller, but because it was under the 150, we could not pursue it.
Members, looking at the repealer and also back at Section 21, I would suggest that we, on the statutes that was with Subdivision 2 that was distributed to you, that we delete the second sentence, leave the first sentence in place in subdivision 2, and delete the second, and then adopt section 21 on the House side. Make that as a suggestion if I look that over.
That's fine.
Sorry, could you just repeat that?
My suggestion on the subdivision 2 to retain the first sentence where they cannot be acquired in this section adjacent to public waters that are unmeandered, are completely surrounded by land owned and maintained for the purpose of an educational or religious institution, and then delete everything else in the subdivision. And then also adopt Section 21. Representative Hanson.
Can we hear from the DNR if that would be...
Mr. Potter?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that would be fine. Again, our goal here is to try to provide access to these small lakes for canoe, kayak type. I mean, we're not looking at major accesses. These are just carrying type facilities. And that would be fine.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not
Senator
sure
Anderson.
If we need to, I mean, maybe there's some middle ground. It makes me a little nervous to do this without just knowing what the reason was for putting this in place in the first place, and maybe there's some smaller lakes that need protecting for a reason. I don't know if, you know, maybe there's a more kind of narrow way we could allow this rather than just taking that whole sentence out. I'm just not sure if there's
What a
center shot.
Could we change the number of acres instead of 150, 125, or 100, and perhaps delete on section 2 the word intensively? Just throwing that out there.
Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody else that would like to comment on this section, on this repealer?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Potter, can you tell us why this was put into law in the first place?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I don't know that. I mean, the original legislation?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That was well before my time. I'd like to comment that on Senator Chaudhry's suggestion of striking out intensively. That wouldn't really meet some of the requests that we've had. Some of these lakes are shallow waterfowl hunting lakes. There's really no fisheries in them to speak of. So it wouldn't allow us to provide access to some of those.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
The intent of this repealer is to help with hunting on shallow lakes and perhaps the Shallow Lakes Initiative.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, correct.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, has anything been moved, or we're just
nothing
kind of struggling moved through it?
Right. Representative
Osmond. Mr. Chair, I don't believe there's any controversy on the repealers that are on the Senate side or the repealer that we have with regard to the Wisconsin reciprocal.
I believe that's correct.
Provisions. So would you like me to move those at this time?
Yes.
Chair, I'd move the Senate repealers along with repealer on the House side. Mr. Knopf, make sure I get the right one. I believe it's 85.054, subdivision 3.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct.
Members, have you heard Representative Osmond's motion to adopt the repealers except for one on 97A141, subdivision 2? Discussion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the repealers, with that exception, are adopted. So we have now adopted all of the similar and identical.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And I think except for the alternative recording of the forest roads and the one that you just left behind on the two public water access sites, I think that's it.
Now, we did not adopt the repealers. What's your wish on section 21, which was the water access? Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, and it would be really helpful to hear from the department on why this is needed. Some specific examples, they have this project or this many projects. And I just haven't heard that. I understand some of the reasoning after kind of leading the department into the answer, but must be a reason for the section, and
okay. Chaudhry, are you working on an amendment or?
No.
Okay, well.
Mr. Potter's back at the table.
Mr. Potter?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry. Again, it's, as we had indicated, it's to help us design sites that adhere to the BMPs that we are asking a lot of the lakeshore owners to adhere to. The other issue that has surfaced is that there's a couple situations. One was on 10 Mile Lake up by Brainerd, where recently we had a landowner approach us that wanted to sell. They had 10 acres that they wanted to sell. We could not buy 10 acres. They were not interested in going through the subdivision of it and that expense, so we lost that opportunity. There is another one that up on Lake Vermilion that I think we are going to get, but it has delayed it a couple years while they did go through the platting process. And so it part of it is dealing with the BMPs and be able to design sites, have enough setback from the water, deal with our stormwater, but also there's situations that come up where landowners own slightly over 7 acres and they really don't want to be left with just a couple acres. If we had the flexibility, perhaps we would acquire the 10 and then what's or more, whatever they had there, and we could sell that, surplus that back. But it's those are the situations that we've encountered in the last few years.
Mr. Potter, and that was to Section 21 that removing the size. Pleasure. Representative Hanson.
I think Section 21, I mean, what it does is it's providing flexibility to the DNR, and sometimes you have opportunities where there's a willing seller to get access, and how the property is managed afterwards in terms of how we deal with the pavement or that. I think we can deal with that in the future and maybe having some standards or some demonstration projects, but if we're getting a public access, I think we want to try to make sure that we have folks give the flexibility to the department to get that, so that people who may not be able to afford a house on the lake are able to have access, whether it's for fishing or for hunting or canoeing or kayaking. And as we know, land is going up, and sometimes you have the opportunities that are just there, and having that limit of maybe 7 acres or only where other access is inadequate, we're limiting our ability to have public access. And so I would encourage someone to move Section 21. I'll move Section
21. Representative Hanson has moved adoption of Section 21 on the House side of the side-by-side. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and Section 21 is adopted. Now, I know there are a couple amendments. One, Senator Saxog briefly explained to us. If you want to reoffer that amendment, Senator Saxog, I think this would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would move then that amendment DV0162B inserted in with the alternative recording for state forest rules. And
so what page is that for? There's a section that's.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, at this point in conference committee, we do a lot of these blank amendments because they can be inserted wherever. The staff will just fit it in, so you don't have to worry about that. So this is all going to go to the revisor's office and we just fit it in.
Is there questions on the DVO 162 amendment? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've passed much of this, if not all of it, in the House. I know there was some questions at the end on that wetland easement, so maybe if Mr. Jaski would address that.
Mr. Jaski, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanson, I think I preface his words by saying I think in connection with a group that we got together, including Senator Anderson, we improved it substantially. So.
Mr. Jaskie.
Mr. Chairman, John Jaskie, Executive Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources. And the Senator Sacksug said, and Representative Hansen as well, the House did pass a version of this bill very early on, and since then the Senate has spent quite a bit more time, I think, on working the details to make them work in the best way they can. And the way the language is before you here, we can support this language, and we at this point know of nobody that would not. So.
Representative Osmond.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. I understand there was some additional language that may have been added in the House by Representative Hackler.
Mr. Jaskie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Osmond, I'm not aware of that, to this particular piece of language.
Well, we're talking about the entire amendment right now?
Yes.
It's my understanding, I'm just getting this information right now, but on lines 1.17 to 1.22, it's my understanding that there was an amendment that was included on this, and I guess this is... I'm not quite sure what that language does, but if they wanted to include it in, including all non-motorized and motorized vehicle use, including all-terrain vehicles, off-road motorcycles and snowmobiles. And you know what that was referring to?
Senator Sacksug.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I do. I believe that public recreation includes those things. I, at this particular time in this situation, I don't think we need to change that.
Okay. Further discussions? Senator Schauder.
I want to first of all say that I'm going to be watching this new provision very closely for several reasons. Number one, it's new and we don't know how it will work. But more importantly, I just want to say that I think the Wetland Conservation Act needs a new paradigm. And it needs to move to not only move from not only replacing wetlands, but protecting them in the first place. And as such, I think what Senator Sacksug has proposed here is important and a good thing. We are proposing this in a limited fashion, perhaps just to see how it will work. But I think this has the potential in concept of greatly improving the Wetland Conservation Act and moving from just beyond replacement of wetlands that are drained or filled, but protecting wetlands in the first place. What do we do? How do we recreate an 800-year-old wetland by replacing it somewhere else? Can't do it. It has special qualities that cannot be replaced even by the best of our Bowser employees. And so I think this is an excellent approach in concept. We will see how it works. And but I really think that Minnesota needs to move forward in improving the Wetland Conservation Act. I've heard questions from other states. What does Minnesota do? What does WACA do for protecting wetlands in the first place? The answer is truthfully very little. And we need a new paradigm. We need to move to protection even before getting to the replacement issue. So I think I compliment Senator Sacksug on what he's proposed. The details here have improved it even further. And I'm looking forward to see how this works.
Members, we've been here for over 2 hours now, and I know some members have a couple other errands they have to do, and some people would like to stretch their legs a little, so the committee will be in recess till 4:15.
Want to vote on this first?
We'll recess till 4:15.
Okay.
The committee's in recess. Members, it has become apparent to us that we're not going to be able to finish tonight. We have some members that have some other things that they need to do. So what I'm going to propose is that we adjourn until sometime tomorrow and maybe ask members to look over the amendments that we know are coming so we can concisely wrap this up and have a meeting tomorrow. Any questions about that?
The only question I have, Mr. Chair, is do we have an accounting of the different amendments that we're aware of? Someone I can talk to that I know has all of them, both sides?
I'm not sure if somebody has all of them, but I would encourage members who have amendments to make sure the other members, that you share them with other members.
I'd be pretty
aware of them.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it would be a little unusual, but if members are willing to just say what they are.
Senator Rommel, I know you have.
I have an amendment from Senator Kubley about pre-entrance permanently and totally disabled veterans into our state parks.
And it's previously passed language?
It's previously passed. It was part of 3385 in the Senate.
Do you mind if we give that amendment out, if somebody wants an wants a copy of that, Mr. Knopf has it. Senator Saxon?
Mr. Chair, I have the Star Lakes Amendment, which is Senator Olson. She's here now. It's in 3385, too, wasn't it, to Senator Shire?
It's also in the budget bill.
Also in the budget bill, right. I have a bill here from Senator Sparks on ISTS. Can you explain that all quickly? Well, we can pass that off.
Mr. Chairman, if you want, we can just pass out all these amendments as people are describing them. The ISTS is basically, you already have this on a, I think it's actually passed the House. It's identical language to what passed off. The problem is the two ships passed, and this was contained in a different Senate bill, and yours has been referred to committee over here. But it's identical language to what the House
passed. It passed the House 134.
Yeah.
ISTS stands for
individual
sewage treatment.
I know members are in a time bind. So
yeah. So in the third one, Mr. Chair, is from Senator Stump. It's a replacement of wetlands plan for development up in Lake of the Woods.
And I understand that would affect one property was affected. That we didn't realize it would be affected when we repealed something in a previous session. There is a fiscal note on that.
Oh, is there a fiscal note?
There is a fiscal note on that.
Oh, is there?
But it's been covered. It was in 33.
Do you have any other amendments?
No.
Senator Shaw, do you have any amendments?
I have Senator Rest Ballast Water Amendment. Do you have it?
I have it.
Oh, okay.
We both have it.
All right, we both have that. It's the exact language that was passed in Senate House 3385. And then I have a...
It's compromised language.
Compromised language. Not that everyone agrees with it, but... And then a non-controversial PCA department bill regarding EPA...
Representative Mole bill.
Oh, yeah, Representative Mole's bill. It was a department bill. It was non-controversial. It was a two-minute explanation. There was no testimony against or opposition ever expressed to it, and it was part of 3385.
And, Mr. Chairman, that does affect revenue to the state, so I think that fiscal analysts have been counting on that revenue. It basically keeps us where the toxic chemical reporting that we had prior to the federal changes. It's basically saying that we're not going to follow the federal changes that relax the reporting requirements. We're going to continue with the reporting requirements that were prior to the federal changes.
Senator Anderson, do you have any amendments?
I just had the ballast water one.
Representative Dietrich, do you have any amendments?
No, I have none.
Representative Mariano? Representative Osmond?
I just have the ISTS that matches up with Alan.
Okay.
Right.
Representative Clark.
Yeah, I have the A2-minute quarantine and the bill, which is the controlling the release identification, which basically means that when the EPA notifies people that there's a problem with a leakage in an area, it required them to follow up and tell them what was done.
We're familiar with that.
You know about that, okay. Now, that's the Senate.
Representative Anthony.
I have the Pine Grove Zoo. I think you've got that.
Okay, with that explanation, we'll be sending out a meeting notice when we have some idea of when we can all meet tomorrow. Will not be in the morning, it'll be later in the day. Conference committee is adjourned.
You know how I see that one just went. No, that's the Alabama.
Pair of legs, I got.
Is this going to be included all? Because I didn't have this opportunity.